Are dents and scratches putting a dent in your day? Introducing Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide, your trusted solution for automotive woes. With over two decades of expertise, Roger Steen Crash Repairs guarantees top-notch service, restoring your vehicle to its former glory in no time. From minor dings to major collisions, our skilled technicians handle it all with precision and care, using state-of-the-art equipment and techniques.
Roger Steen Crash Repairs saved my car. It looks brand new.
Fast, friendly and reliable. I wouldn't trust anyone else with my vehicle. Don't let accidents slow you down. Visit Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide at 14 Penner Avenue, Glynde, for quality service you can count on. And here's a special offer just for our listeners. Mention this podcast and receive a $100 discount on your repair. Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide. Excellence in every repair.
Previously on the Game On Podcast.
So I came over, had one training session, absolutely loved it. And the boys were wonderful. I went back to Melbourne, and I was supposed to go on a camp with Sandringham, and I rang Andy Collins and said, look, Colo, I'm going to go to Adelaide. He wasn't too happy. And then obviously a few years later, he lobbed up coaching Westies. But I moved over, probably expecting to be here for maybe 6 months, see how it went. And yeah, mate, it's just a tick over 26 years now.
I was going to say he's still here. Now, I would have been shot. I'd forgotten to do this, Pete. There is one moment when Robbie was playing for Sydney and he looks up and he sees a banner, Bob Neil, with NEIL on it. And he thinks, oh, that's nice that, yeah, I've got some support here and all that. But they could at least spell my bloody name correctly. And I admit I was ringing Danny Hanson. That's who I was talking to on the phone when I walked in, trying to remember if there was any others there. And he told me exactly where it was. And it was just a plain Bob Neil. And so he walks up to Scotty Robinson, and Scotty Robinson goes, hey, pal, it's nothing to do with you, mate. It's to do with the Adelaide Footy Club. He is a legend, not you, pal. So, yeah.
Well, the other funny part about that, Mal, is that I mentioned Troy Gray. Troy worked at Sydney Uni. And he was doing a bit of bar work there. And
yes,
the guy who managed the bar went to Adelaide Uni, and he had the Bob Neil songbook.
Yes. So, I gave you one.
There's a Bob Neil stand. I'm going, mate, yeah. I swear, look, mate, I've got a fan club up the eastern side, just in front of the Bill O'Reilly stand.
Yeah,
mate.
Yeah.
And he goes, nah. He said, mate, they're from Adelaide Uni. I'll show you. And he's brought out the Bob Neil songbook and had it. So I know you gave me a copy.
Yeah, when you first started at Nord, yeah. But,
Yeah, I already had one, mate. I had one in 1994, so one of the first copies, I reckon. But that's how we got it. But Robbo, he was a Norwood boy previous to that, before going to Sturt when he got back. But he was a good mate of mine there. But yeah, he knew who Bob Neil was and told us all the Macca stories and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So I had a good feel for the Norwood Footy Club before I actually moved over here.
Sportscast SA presents Game On. Game On. South Australia's destination for everything sports. Local, national and international sports. AFL football, soccer, basketball, golf, baseball, tennis, cricket, and any other sports played in this wide world. And we're going to have a blast doing it. So sit back, relax, and let's do this thing. Welcome to Game On.
Welcome to Game On. My name's Pete and Malcolm once again in the studio, and Robbie Neil there, part two with the banner at the SCG. Young fella expecting a lot of support, and it's not for him.
It was bloody funny that I do remember talking about him. God, as we said, that's nearly 25 years ago we first had that conversation, and Scotty Robinson putting him back in the spot. I admit I forgot to tag Scotty on the post, so I will later on.
Go back and do that one as well. All right, mate, let's get into Around the Grounds.
Around the Grounds.
All right, today, as usual, we're going to do the SANFL, the SANFLW, some cricket. Special guest in the SNFL segment this week is David Kuzner from the Woodville West Torrens Footy Club and Craig Martin, talking all things golf with Liv being in Adelaide this weekend. But we'll kick off with the AFL. We might leave the hot topics just to the side for the moment, and we'll start off with the Adelaide Footy Club. The Oval proposal once again seems to look like it's hit another snag. When is enough enough?
They're going to have to keep fighting, trying to get somewhere. That's the problem. It's really frustrating, and as some people have said, and I completely agree personally, Brisbane have got it right. One council, and yet how much bullshit do you get rid of?
Yep. Yeah,
it's pathetic. It's embarrassing. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, the classic example is Sturt want to put a fence around their oval stuff just for security. And yet I was listening to the interview that, you know, the councilman got to jump through this hoop and that hoop, and they were originally thinking that it was going to be decided on Monday night. And you know, it's just ridiculous the amount of politics that is going on, not only, you know, council level as well.
Yeah, and you have the stupidity of the Parklands Preservation Society getting involved, where realistically, this should have been at the Aquatic Centre. That was the no-brainer. They actually got offered I don't think the deal was great for the Adelaide Footy Club.
Yep.
They got offered a wish out. The Adelaide City Council should have – that was an IKEA start your car moment. And you have the bozos when the parklands get involved, where ironically it was providing more parklands if that actually – out of that. But bury your head in the sand bullshit, yeah. Very frustrating.
We're all for preserving the parklands where we possibly can, but you've got to – amalgamate the new stadiums and the new equipment and the new clubs within your area as well. You know, speaking with someone who's not from Adelaide, asking why do we have so many parklands, clear and obvious reason for that is we want to continue to have a beautiful state, but there has to be some development there as well.
Yeah.
We'll stick with Adelaide, mate. The Essendon game, a bit of a debacle in every sense. There was no real silver lining from this game for me.
Nothing whatsoever. I admit, bit flummoxed for the Adelaide supporters keep carrying on about the umpiring. Well,
but there's 50 other umpiring decisions a game.
It's pathetic. Josh Rochelle, put your head over the ball twice.
Yep.
That's way more important than an umpiring so-called error.
But I think that's also, to Josh's credit, and I know he's come out and sort of said, look, but I also think that there's a case of they've lost confidence in everything.
Oh, no doubt of it.
That was probably endemic of the whole 2024 season for the Crows.
Yeah, and you would have thought after the game against Carlton, which they'd played well in, you would have thought there would have been a bit more impetus than the next week and all that, but it didn't seem like
it. Well, it was almost a case of they thought that it was just going to happen.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Again, I think it's, shows how much played above the ears, as we always say, and, lack of confidence and then errors. Shocking disposal. And Essendon should have won easy.
Yes.
But the carry-on, I'm sorry, unbelievable over one umpiring decision.
Right. Well, we'll talk about that one umpiring decision right now. Where do you sit on it, being an umpire?
Yeah. Oh, look, it's holding the ball. Yep. It is holding the ball. Lee Matthews to say that
it was pushing the back.
Pushing the back. I'm all for pushing the back's being paid. I get really angry that pushing the back is a rule which is now been forgotten. But Taylor Walker didn't push him in the back. If you actually watch that again, he's gone on the side. Mm-hmm. So Lee's wrong there. He should have been holding the ball, but so what? I'm sorry. Look after the game yourself.
Well, I don't think Walker really jumped on him any more forceful than I've seen.
Nah.
A million tackles every weekend.
If you're saying that is, you're paying 100 in the back. I thought that was bizarre. And Draper knew at the end afterwards he should have been paying by his reaction. It's a poor decision, but get on with it.
Now, my next question, and this is probably in my hot topics, but we'll talk about it now while we're here. Can you have the umpires, when we're saying they should be brave to make that decision at that time of the game? Now, for me, really? The umpire should be making the decision on, all right, he may not have been sighted or there was legs involved. Look, I totally understand that, and I understand that from that point of view. But to come out and say, oh, they'd be brave to make that decision at that stage of the game in that area of the ground, I think's wrong.
Yeah, I do. As an umpire, I understand what he means. Yep. It's probably not the best way of wording, But as an umpire, you really want the players to decide the result. You don't really want to pay a free kick to decide the game. That's what he's really trying to say, but it's poor. It should have been paid.
Yes.
It's an umpiring error. It should have been paid. But get on with it.
Why is it then, and this is a question without notice, why is it then during finals we seem to have the umpires almost put the whistles away to a certain degree?
Or the grand final. Not so much the others.
Yeah.
Because, and I've always had this as an umpire theory.
Yep.
You're observed every other week and your appointments depend on what your observers say. And I've just copped that as we're talking previously.
Yeah, yep.
And out of that, once you've got the grand final, can't do anything else.
Yes.
So I reckon a lot of umpires go, I reckon there's
it's a
bit
free
of,
hit.
Yeah.
It's almost a free hit.
Yeah.
I've always had
that theory.
All right, we'll move on. Talk about Adelaide and their round this week in a minute. We'll move on to Port Adelaide. Port Adelaide faced one of their harshest reality checks this season following the thumping to Collingwood at the MCG on Saturday.
Yeah, admittedly, I've only seen the highlights and like, you're just following the scores. I was up at Modbury and get out of the Modbury folk that I was sitting under the balcony with my dad. Now, Modbury Footy Club, absolutely fantastic to my father because my father lives in the old, in the retirement home across the road.
Yep.
Well, let's just say a couple of the Modbury people weren't really happy that someone barracking for the other team in Adelaide Uni were underneath the thing. So it was entertaining, and Uni got up. So out of that,
footy clubs are good for banter, mate. Yeah, that's what it's all
and
about. That's,
and as one guy from Modbury actually did put him back in the place, said, "Hey, hang on, this is a bit of fun. Stop, don't be an idiot."
Yeah,
and so it was a bit of fun. So, but thank you to Modbury that what they do for my dad, which is way more important. But so we're checking the scores of that game, and shit, Port are 6 up.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, we checked the half-time score, and
things have turned around.
Collingwood are a goal up, 6-5 to nothing from the, I think it was the 12-minute mark of the second quarter, and it just continued from there.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the one, Butters best on ground by a mile at quarter time.
Yes.
And they managed to put the clamps on Butters, and the rest of the team seemed to fell away a bit there. Horn Francis hurting his hammy as well. So it seems to be possibly if you block the dynamic three.
Yes.
Does that then cause a few other can't get
bit
the
of
footy
a
in and the domino effect.
Yeah.
It's raised a big question now about Port because at that stage you thought, geez, they go
they're on
win
here. Yep.
You're almost thinking, right, they're going to get a top four finish, couple of home finals. Suddenly the questions are back.
Unfortunately, with most teams this year, you can't put the crystal ball on it because it's just changing from week to week.
Well, that game, it was really 15 minutes changed everything.
Yep.
So, yeah.
All right, we'll leave Adelaide and Port there for last week's games.
Probably the one other point there I'll say from watching the highlights, geez, Collingwood did play some bloody
good
footy,
football. Though. Yep. Yeah. We'll come to that in a minute because I have got that down here. We'll move on to the AFL Hot Topics. We'll start off with Adelaide at the moment. Who do they bring in? Dowling, Curtin, Himmelberg, Strawn or Crouch or all of them?
Dowling should have been in from round one for mine.
Yep.
I saw enough of him in his draft year. He's clean. I just can't work out why they haven't played him.
Mm-hmm.
I think Crouch comes in and I think personally I drop Riley O'Brien. I readily admit that. I've seen a stat today trying to say he's high up in the hitouts to advantage. I've got a real beef on the way stats are done. Now, if I'm rucking and the ruck drops at your feet, you grab the ball and just quickly boot it forward. That's called as a ruck hitout to advantage. It's bullshit. No, you should be a ruck hitout to advantage should be a clearing the area, a tap to advantage, and you actually get a chance to use advantage, not a hat kick forward. So I disagree with the way the stats are done there.
Well, I mean, you look at someone like a Grundy, a Gorn in the AFL. Gorn you look
especially.
At someone like Boyd in the SNFL dominating, giving his...
I watched Redden on Sunday.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Giving his midfielders first opportunity not only to get the ball out of the middle, but a clean take out of the middle, and that's where you really want to be.
Yeah.
From all the reports, Strawn obviously is doing well at the SNFL level and still continues to be shunned, and I just don't know why he's not being talked about enough. I do agree with Crouch. Dowling, for me, looks like a goer.
I use.
And Curtin, I think every other draftee's been looked at.
Yeah.
Why are we holding him back?
Well, especially what they gave up to get him. They made a heaven and earth play to get him.
Yep.
So they missed out on Taylor Goad because of that.
Yep.
I can't. I understand round one or two, but I would have thought by now you go, right, let's have a look.
Absolutely.
Especially when they're struggling.
Well, yeah, it doesn't get much,
I don't get it.
Much worse than this. What do we make of the Rochelle celebrations and the missed marks? We did talk about it briefly before. Is it a case of, you know, a young player down on confidence?
I think the real worrying bit now, every side will be targeting him physically from now on, so there's a real question mark on the kid. Massive question mark. He hasn't just got the gorilla on his back. He's got the whole bloody zoo on his back at the moment.
It'll really show what the team is made of, whether they stick up for him or not, or just let it go. Because I think that's the one thing that the Crows have missed for quite some time is a bit of mongrel.
Yeah. Funny you mentioned that in terms of mongrel. I actually watched my son out on one of his sales, found the 1988 Bicentennial Carnival game. And obviously I was there.
Yep.
But just watched it again last night. It's the first time I've seen it again since. And how much Marty Leslie intimidated Dermot Brereton and Gary McIntosh intimidated Diesel Williams was extraordinary. And I messaged Marty Leslie, previous guest on the show, about that. So it was actually interesting, and Aishi agreed. And that, so it was really interesting to see South Australia
intimidate
Victoria. So it was good.
Maybe that's something the Crows need to work on, is a little bit of mongrel just somewhere from someone.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not saying go out there stupid and go nuts, but you know, you can't play almost touch footy these days, but you do need to have a little bit of mongrel. And you look at some of the better teams at the moment, they do have one or two enforcers in there. All right, let's stay with Adelaide there. I know the name of the game is to win, but are the Crows better off trying to cycle through the players to see whether they're at the level or they're tradable?
I think they have to before the end. Surely, what is the point Strawn's been on the list 4 years now? Surely they've got to have a look at him with O'Brien struggling.
Yep.
I just don't get it out of that.
Yeah. I mean, I know we're only 6-7 games in. We're at the quarter mark of the season. I know you don't want to give up, but I know the name of the game is wins and losses. But if we're in this rebuild that the Crows are still
and I think
on.
It looks like the rebuild's gone backwards.
Yes.
So they do. I think they've got to have a decent look at their whole list.
Yep.
Yep.
Ideally. Who do they build the team around? Who are the non-negotiables at this stage?
Soligo.
Yep.
Soligo. Rankin.
Michael Annie.
Yeah, Michael Annie. This is not much, though.
Rankin.
Yeah.
Rochelle.
Maybe.
Thilthorpe.
Yeah, I still think so, but geez.
What about Fogarty?
No. Fogarty at the moment, there's massive question marks on him.
What about in the middle? Dawson, obviously.
Yeah. But
gets a bit thin after that. What about in the back line?
Dawson and Soligo after that. I think Murray.
Murray, yep.
You've got to remember him being out injured is pretty crucial. Murray, Michael Annie.
Butts.
I think he's a maybe. I think Keane's probably more a tick than Butts.
Yep.
Hey,
and that's a bit of a worry considering not only is an international player, but two, he's only in, what, fifth or sixth year of playing AFL football?
It's pretty thin if you really
Drill down to it. That's why I'm saying.
Exactly.
When you're starting a new team, who are you building your spine around?
And
this is where I'm at.
Oh, so many honest battlers. How can you have Riley O'Brien and Lachie Murphy in your leadership group? You can't have honest battlers.
Well, I saw something about them trying to rush him back this week or next week. God. Like, please no. Yeah. All right. And the last one there, how many players are playing out of position? Is this part of them being more flexible moving forward? Or, you know, because I look at someone like a Scholl who has got pace, but they won't play him on the wing.
Oh, he has played on the wing as well. Not so sure it's anyone. I don't think there's anything glaring in that way. I just don't think they're good enough.
Yep. Can Adelaide mark enough balls inside 50 to outscore their opposition, not only against North Melbourne this weekend, but any opposition moving forward?
At the moment, it's a no, isn't it?
It is indeed. All right, let's move on to Port Adelaide with the hot topics. It's a surprise stat that the Fab 3 or 4 haven't spent a whole lot of time in the centre, approximately 20% of game time so far.
Yeah, they're probably still trying. Depends how Drew then is involved, whether they've got him tagging, whether they, you know, how do you fit Ollie Wines midfield? tried to play Ollie Wines somewhere else last year, and he showed that he's an inside midfielder or an inside midfielder, or he doesn't play.
Yep.
So
but they played him on a wing, though.
Yeah, which he's not.
I don't think he's not a winger.
No.
See him as more of a half forward, though.
No, I think he's an inside mid. I just don't think he's quick enough anywhere else. And I think that's his strength, of the bullocking sort of body.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think he's got the finesse to play anywhere else.
Yep. Boasting a strong midfield consisting of Rosie, Butters and Horn Francis, the trio were comprehensively beaten at the Coalface against the Pies, losing the count by 41. This seems to be their Achilles heel, their contested ball.
Yeah, we know how good that those three are outside, but are they the right mix? Is there enough tough inside balls? That's going to be the big question mark on them, especially playing away.
Yep. This week, Jones, Bergman, and possible hamstring to Horn Francis may stop them from playing this weekend.
Yeah.
Is that going to be a big loss? I know Horn Francis probably will be.
Yeah.
But Jones and Bergman?
Well, it's two more that won't play against Nord on Saturday night. Well, so, yeah, I don't mind that personally.
Forgot
about
that.
Yeah.
No, fair call. And Port Adelaide's coach Ken Hinckley stated that there's no end date to his tenure at Albion following further dialogue surrounding the potential coaching succession plan at the Power. How do we see that one playing out?
I hope it doesn't become a Mick Malthouse where he got dragged out screaming. I don't think that would be in Ken's best interest. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, probably depends what else is happening elsewhere. Wait and see.
Well, there's a long time to go in this season that's got to play out, but it seems like a gentleman's handshake has been made with Josh Carr, so I'll leave it there. Can Port Adelaide change their contested possession game to combat the other top eight or top four sides before the end of the season, because considering it is their Achilles heel?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Boak comes back involved as well into the equation, so I think it's tinkering. It's a fine line.
Yep.
Yeah. I haven't got Port out of the equation yet.
All right, let's continue on with some of the other hot topics going around the AFL. One more on the Crows. The Crows vow to go hard at the recruiting and trade table. Who, how, and why can this happen, considering it's never been their strength?
Yeah, yes and no. They have got Dawson and Rankin the last few years, so out of that. But at the moment, all of a sudden, they're probably nowhere near as attractive as they were at the end of last season, where people thought Adelaide were building.
Yep.
Now, all of a sudden, is this the year where you go backwards before another forward moves? Who? Not 100% sure, but...
Which has happened to a lot of teams.
A lot of teams.
Carlton are probably the greatest example I know of.
Richmond.
And Richmond are the same.
Yeah, so it's not a yes or a no, but I just
can't find anybody that would fit what they need and how they need it right here, right now, at the moment.
I'd like to get Lukosius, but he's not. They need more. You know, well, the guys rucking for Sydney, for mine, was always their greatest requirement.
Yep.
So,
but also the players. Again, but also the players got to want to come too.
Oh,
that's the other
very
thing.
Much so.
This is the other thing.
I don't sort of get where Port have recruited Soldo and Sweet this year. Well, I would have thought Adelaide would have been made a big play for one of those two as well, and it doesn't seem like it happened.
Well, there's a ruckman sitting at Fremantle on a pretty big sizable contract that's not getting a game at the moment, or is getting a game but being played out of position. So interesting call on that one there. Did the real Collingwood finally turn up last week?
I think we think so, but let's wait and see. They should beat Essendon on Anzac Day, but yeah. If you can bash Collingwood into a real hard-fought scrap game,
yes,
Collingwood lack of a key forward can come out. But if they manage to move it quickly enough,
then they've got multiple options.
So that's the question mark.
I think that's the same with most teams.
Yeah,
get that little bit of movement. I mean, Adelaide were exactly like that against Carlton the week before. So, yeah, very, very interesting. AFL teams resting players this early in the season, is this a sign that the amount of games or the squad numbers needs to be revised?
Yeah, possibly, because it's come out. It looks like Harley Reid won't play for West Coast. So, Yeah, I agree. For mine, you know, I'm a bit surprised, like Charlie Dixon last week. You know,
probably where it gets to. I have this on the run sheet in that teams that are already pre-working out their players who are having a rest in round six. And yeah, like Port came out and said, well, we made this decision at the beginning of the year, which is really weird for me.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think that's a bit too much forward planning, cut in stone, and a bit of lack of, yeah, let's work this out a bit. I would have thought he could have played last weekend, Charlie Dixon, and not played this week.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Port looked totally different without Dixon there as well.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
Although they started like a bomb, so,
yeah. The AFL fixture has come under scrutiny from club captains with a dispute over the amount of short turnaround between games. What are your thoughts on that, mate?
It's everyone. I think they've all got – I think there was a deal down there where they'd virtually all – every club's got the same number of short breaks. So,
yep,
it's one of those things. And I'm sorry, it's not like now you're rushing – you're getting home and rushing to your full-time job and then rushing to training and – they don't have to do anything else. They can have, you know, masseur, the
physio ice
down
baths,
the beach, yep. Yeah, ice bath. So I think it's a bit over the top.
Is it a case of that if your squad is deep enough, you're able to cover those short turnarounds in a smart way? I know we're sort of talking about resting players, but in this situation where you do have these sort of three games in 11 days or whatever it is that a few teams have had to play lately, the depth of your squad is being tested right there and then, isn't it?
It is, but out of that, so is the opposition.
Yes.
I don't quite, like, there's been a lot of carry-on St Kilda-wise. Well, hang on, Western Bulldogs were virtually in the same boat. So,
yeah, it's not like one was coming off of a seven-day break and one was only coming off a four-day break.
And you came together around, everyone was here. And I'm sorry, that's an interstate. We're acting like Adelaide's so far away, like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're not travelling to China or the US, 12, 14-hour trip. All right, we'll leave that one there.
Yeah.
Anzac Day, is this the biggest day outside the grand final in the AFL?
It is, and I've always said I think it's disgraceful that it's a two-side monopoly. I've always said it should be the previous year's grand finalists. Keep it simple, exactly what is done here. Mm-hmm. Cornell, Nord had the benefit last year.
Yep.
Game was at the home of football where tomorrow, and I'll probably go down the bay tomorrow afternoon.
Yep.
That's the way it should be for mine.
Absolutely. It would be nice to see it shared around, but then again, there's games now around it. We've got Anzac Eve and the day of and the day after and so on and so on. So, but it is a round. It is an Anzac round.
Yep.
But I think you're right. The last 2 years, grand finalists would certainly be good. Does the AFL draft help struggling teams advance up the ladder, or does it leave them to wane at the bottom?
Well, at the moment, suddenly West Coast seemed to have helped and Reed suddenly exploded.
Yep.
So I think you can probably have a bit of a case of that both ways.
Well, I mean, you look at North Melbourne as the opposite example.
Yeah.
Won one game out of their last 27.
Yeah.
Horn Francis obviously left for personal reasons as well. But, you know, how long do you keep flogging a dead horse? That's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's. I don't think there's a yes or a no on that one.
Yep. Cam Zerha, future at North Melbourne, which is what we were talking about there. Who are possible suitors?
Let's go back to the previous point. Well, let's not say the drafting. Mm-hmm. Let's go on development, coaching and all that. Is that good enough?
Yep.
So it's not just the draft. Everyone goes, picking McCartan over Petrarca or Billings over Bonapelli are shocking choices. Well, but who's to say that development coaching wasn't better elsewise? So I think that's a very important point.
I think I think a lot of that also plays into the soft cap and the cap for the coaching group, obviously pre-COVID, now post-COVID, that you really need to get some of that back up to the levels that it was for you to be able to employ those coaches. Yeah. Maybe you've put too many eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
Anyway, is what it is. The AFL draft helping struggling teams, you've sort of said that, it can work both ways, so I totally understand that. How have the Cats got it so right when so many are to get it wrong? Smart drafting, recycling players, player development, which we were just talking about.
I think it's a bit of everything, but if you do go through their draft choices of their glorious times where Chapman, Kelly, Johnson were all 30-plus Cam Ling. So mm-hmm. they made some fantastic decisions mm-hmm. on drafting, and you know that's where Wells was regarded as the guru. So, yeah.
Something that a few teams need to look at moving forward. AFL Executive General Manager of Football, Laura Kane, announced the appointment of experienced Senior Marketing and Strategy Specialist Emma Moore as the new General Manager role of the AFLW.
Yeah, let's just wait and see. You know, I'll give anyone a chance to start with anyone. But as I said on Laura Kane, the jury's well and truly out there.
Still a question mark for me as well. Yep, correct. Yep. The AFL Tribunal, did they get it wrong with the Toby Green decision? How can you fix it, or can it be fixed?
I think there's so many things with this where it's virtually a few things. So, one, you're trying to tell the player that you can't brace to protect yourself. You've got to leave yourself wide open, that the player in front's effectively got right away and it's your
yep.
duty. It goes against everything you've always taught, and his instinct is to turn to brace yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Also, really, what was the difference between what Toby Green did and what Peter Wright did? Because it's outcome-based.
Yes.
He one game versus four games. You know, on the AFL rulings, the way it still is at the moment, go through a red light camera but not cause an accident, play on. You know, I think there are so many things. And again, the Jesse Hogan one last night where really it's starting to seem like the guy who's running the tribunal is a bit of, well, up you, you'll do as I say sort of thing, because a few of his decisions have been almost aggressive back going, no, so your wording's wrong. So, yeah, there's a few really
questionable,
yes, questionable
outcomes from the tribunal. I totally agree with
frustration.
I heard Jonathan Brown come out and say we're becoming more and more like Gaelic footy. That's a worry from a former player saying that I can see this sort of happening this way.
It is, but what's happening behind the scenes concussion-wise, I get why they're doing it,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's lacking consistency and it's lacking common sense.
Yes. Yep. So, all right, mate, we better take a very, very quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk our tips for this weekend and then obviously move on to the SNFL, the SNFLW, the cricket, and our special guest, David Kuzner.
Are dents and scratches putting a dent in your day? Introducing Rogerstein Crash Repairs Adelaide, your trusted solution for automotive woes. With over two decades of expertise, Rogerstein Crash Repairs guarantees top-notch service, restoring your vehicle to its former glory in no time. From minor dings to major collisions, our skilled technicians handle it all with precision and care, using state-of-the-art equipment and techniques.
Rogerstein Crash Repairs saved my car. It looks brand new.
Fast, friendly and reliable. I wouldn't trust anyone else with my vehicle. Don't let accidents slow you down. Visit Rogerstein Crash Repairs Adelaide at 14 Penner Avenue, Glynde, for quality service you can count on. And here's a special offer just for our listeners. Mention this podcast and receive a $100 discount on your repair. Rogerstein Crash Repairs Adelaide. Excellence in every repair.
Hi, I'm Rachel Spawn and you're listening to the Game On podcast.
All right, mate, we continue on with the AFL. Some tips for this week, Richmond v Melbourne.
I'll go for the D's.
I will go the D's there. The big Thursday Anzac clash between Essendon and Collingwood.
Pies.
I'm going to go Collingwood as well. The Giants v the Lions.
Yeah, I'll go the Giants if in doubt. It's in Canberra too.
It is, Manuka Oval there. I'm going to go the Giants there as well. Port Adelaide v St Kilda.
Port Adelaide.
I'm picking Port Adelaide to bounce back there. North Melbourne v Adelaide.
Adelaide.
I'm picking North Melbourne.
Yeah, I don't blame
I just think it's one of these games that could go horribly wrong for the Crows.
Yeah, no.
I don't want it to happen, but see North getting up for this game, and it's down in Tassie, and Crows don't play well down there.
All
right. Geelong v Carlton.
Toss the coin. I've gone the Cats.
I'm going to go the Blues.
Yep.
But in a close one, a very, very close one. The Dockers v the Bulldogs.
It's Geez, that's a hard one. It really is. The Dockers, you know.
They were horrible last week against West Coast.
They were atrocious. And I'm going to go, I think the Western Bulldogs are a better side on paper. I'm going for the Dogs.
I'm going to go the Bulldogs as well.
Yep.
But again, just, it's for me a flip of the coin there as well. Suns v. West Coast?
I'll go the Suns.
I'll go the Suns with Reed, obviously, getting a rest, which I think's good. I think they're managing him well.
I understand why.
Play him for 4 or 5 weeks, then give him a little bit of time off. I think I did hear, who was it today on the radio? It might have been Timmy G talking about playing some of these guys, you know, these younger guys for 4 or 5 weeks and then giving them a little spell rather than playing 20 or 30 games in the second tier. The Hawks v. the Swans.
I'll go the Swans.
And for the first time this year, we don't have a bye.
Yeah.
So we get through all 9 games this weekend. Let's move on to the SNFL. Round 2 games were won by Central Districts. North Adelaide getting up over Sturt. Interesting one there.
Yep.
Glenelg putting Adelaide to the sword a little bit. Norwood getting up over the Bloods. And Woodville West Torrens continue to impress over Port Adelaide.
Yeah, they did the job. I did go down on Sunday to have a look at that. So, yeah, for mine, it's funny. We'll talk to David Cousin about the recruiting side of it, but ironically, the most important one is probably Jared Redden returning.
Mm-hmm.
And, he looks in good, Nick.
Yep.
He's lighter. His footy smarts stood out, and I think he's their key weapon. And Riley Knight returned, and, they did enough. So.
Absolutely. Speaking of Woodville West Torrens, we welcome Dave Kuzner to the line right now.
Hey, David. We're pleased to have on the line David Kuzner, the CEO of Woodville West Torrens. Man, I've got enormous respect for. He's been heavily involved in coaching the South Australian side, Inclusive League, also involved with Woodville West Torrens and with wheelchair footy in general. So he sees the whole picture. A man of many hats. Welcome aboard, David.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us, mate. Let's start off with Woodville West Torrens at the moment. Absolutely flying. Your two big recruits, Sammy Jacobs and Redden, holding the club up at the moment.
They're doing a great job too, Ruckman. Really happy with how the guys are going. They've managed to bond quite well over the pre-season. It's always challenging when you get a new coach coming in of how the dynamics are going to work out. But Source is an amazing individual, and we're extremely lucky that he applied for the job and got the job. So we're very happy with how he's got everything running.
Bit of irony that spoke to you several times, you and Luke Powell, when you were out and about with your recruiting drives last year and trying to get out of how you were going, and you were replying back very firmly, no, we don't give that out to Nord people. And amusingly, though, with Jared Redden arriving, managing to get him back, and he looks $1 million. He looks fitter than what he's probably ever been.
Yeah, I think that's a real credit to Redden. I think, every club, not just the Eagles, we all struggle with finding big men that can stay intact for a long period of time. Obviously, it's a genetic thing. When they're bigger, they're prone to more injuries. But Redo was quite a good one. It was a quick phone call that Source, Matthew Goldsworthy, our footy operations manager, and myself, we always sat down and spoke about it, and we just thought we'd throw it out to Redo. And I think within about 5 minutes, Redo was on board. He was. I think it's one of those things. He's probably been waiting to come back. But he is in extreme, his condition's fantastic at the moment. He's got a lawnmowing round, a Mr. Clip lawnmowing round, and he's probably, I would say, close to 15 kilos lighter.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Finished up.
Standing next to him last Sunday night afterwards, hanging around at Woodville last Sunday night, and I looked and thought, geez, he's easily the lightest. And I'm sitting there thinking, I wish he'd done that, because he's a mile better player than Riley O'Brien is, and he looks in fantastic condition at the moment. And I'm sure there's the what ifs, but that body, that bit of the year off with the not having the grind and the bash and crash, and he looks fantastic, and is a huge recruit for you guys.
Oh, exactly right. No, I'm pretty biased, but I would say he's probably the number one ruck the ruckman going around in the competition, and he just the ability that he's got, he's got a young family. They've just had a new baby. yeah, Renault's just in a really good place, and he does bring something extra to the club when he's around. So, no, we were absolutely over the moon when he accepted to come back in.
Oh, it'll be a fantastic duel with him and when him and Harry Boyd, because that's certainly the two best. And, yeah, he looks and, you know, further going on with what's happening at Woodville West Orange, a big build at the moment, mate. How's all that taking shape, etc.?
Yeah, so we finished the Barry Jarman grandstand change rooms have all been finished now. So that's that was a $1.6 million build that refurbishment we would call it, where we've updated the change rooms and given the guys and the girls the ability to probably operate out of a professional environment. Prior to that, had the old shower pole with the 8 shower heads on it, and we were expecting the young ladies and the men and all that to be able to operate out of those facilities, which is just unreasonable in today's state league sporting environment. So for us, we were really committed to getting that going. We're now onto our second project, which is the Percy Fox Grandstand. So the away change rooms will be transformed into more female-friendly, child-safe environments. That'll start just after July. So the away team will be treated no different to the home team, which I think is most clubs' ambition these days, is to get everybody on equal footing in that sense.
Yeah, I think gone are the days of, you know, have the opposition change in that little doghouse and make sure that there were cold showers. And, yeah, I think we've moved past those days. So go through. So now you started recently, become the CEO, David. How's that transition into, you know, moving from what you were doing work-wise and running your business there into being CEO, mate?
Yeah, no, it's been a really good transition. I mean, I've been at the club for 9 years in a board position. So I held the football portfolios, community engagement, government liaison portfolios at the club, and as a volunteer director. And to be able to have the opportunity to come in as a CEO and actually work full-time in footy has been, for me, it's the ultimate job, and I've enjoyed it so far. We've been able to have a really good first 9 months in the role, where we've been able to make some significant changes at the club within the aesthetics of it and the management. And, you know, there wasn't anything broken at the Eagles, which was fantastic. You know, Luke Power did an amazing job, and Christine Williams, amazing jobs prior. So I've been able to just come in and build on what's already been there. But in a full-time capacity, it's just, yeah, it's the ideal job for me.
Oh, and Christine's a fantastic, very quiet, very efficient person, you know, always and not afraid to do anything, like run the water and help out and be, you know, in the reserves game, and yeah, very much down to earth and do anything. You know, a lot of time for Christine and Sue Dewing and that they see the whole picture very well.
Oh, I think that's right. I think you've got your Christines, you've got your Emmas from Emma and Connie from down at West Adelaide, you have Sue Dewings, people like that. The work those guys put in, and, you know, whether you're a CEO, you work for next on nothing, because it is a 7 day a week job at a football club, and it's all hours of the day where you're engaged. But, you know, the volunteers of your Christine Williams's, your Emma's, people like that, they're the ones that, you know, when Christine's running water and that's done as a volunteer.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Done as somebody that's giving their time to the game, because getting volunteers these days is getting harder in all codes, not just this NFL footy, but yeah, we really got to appreciate people like Christine and that just give their time freely.
And yeah, in that, exactly, Christine, Sue, yourself, always there at wheelchair footy too. You know, it's something, it's a passion of mine as well, the whole wheelchair footy. I think we develop a pretty close community amongst those of us who are involved. And yeah, I just think we see the whole picture a bit more.
That's right. I think gone are the days where we had the inter-club rivalries where we wouldn't talk to each other or we were against each other. I think most of the clubs are now combined, and we all want to succeed on the field. That's our number one motivating factor of why we exist. But it doesn't mean we can't work together on other things, such as improving the wheelchair football games, the inclusive leagues. You know, those things are critical for our communities that we operate within. So, I think you're right. It's the environments are very encouraging at the moment.
So, as a CEO of a you know, football club that's in the SANFL, what are some of the biggest challenges that you've identified, not only from a club point of view, but from the SANFL point of view?
Yeah, I think obviously for us, it is the volunteer base, trying to get the volunteers regularly, because, you know, we do tend to use them as much as we can, and it does present timing issues for a lot of volunteers. But probably we've obviously got the dramas with AFL clubs wanting to leave and things like that, which create some issues at the moment. They just create an instability within the league. I mean, we have got the best second league outside, well, the best league outside exactly. of the AFL. Ask the players. We, in our recruiting each year, and we speak to many of players from around Australia, they want to come to the SANFL. So we have a brand in the league that is second to none. And for us, it's just really maintaining the integrity of the brand. Which is, you know, we've got eight strong clubs that, you know, football's played at a high level in South Australia, and I think we should be really proud of that and just keep promoting that. But that is a challenge for us.
Yeah, and you know my thoughts there, David. In terms of, to just explain the inclusive league, your explain the inclusive league to people out there who don't need a bit of information and your role, mate.
Right, so the SANFL APM Inclusive League is based on predominantly it's all male athletes at the moment. So it's male athletes with an intellectual disability on a scale. It's based on a scoring system for the depth of the disability they have. But from there, they play for clubs like Kilburn, Salisbury, Athelstan, Goodwood, Christie's Beach, Kenilworth. There's quite a few clubs now that have got it all going. And from there, we pick a state team of 16 players that travel and play in the AFL Inclusive Academy. So they get to go onto onto a national platform and display their skills. Last year, we finished second by 4 points. And
yes.
That was up in Brisbane. And then the year before, we actually won the Division 1 Grand Final. So it was the first time SA had won the final. So, there's some very talented footballers within that cohort. What they do is they essentially go away for a week at a time, and they can play up to, I think it's in the vicinity of 10 games within a week. So it's a very demanding program they undertake, but they do it. They represent the state extremely well.
I think also though the whole purpose of the leg in that is having people out there involved in sport, the intellectual challenges and that, and it's also a bit unique that you may be standing your best mate a fair bit and all that. And I really enjoy the competition and the camaraderie between everyone there as well.
Well, no, and that's exactly right. From a club perspective, we've hosted for the past 4 years as an Eagles, we've hosted the Inclusive League for training sessions or games, their representative games. And that it's what those guys give back to our league players and that. I mean, on the weekend, people would have observed the fact that our guys do the guard of honour, but it's what they do inside the change rooms that people don't see is when they're getting around talking to them. That's the sort of we actually take more out of it as a league club than what probably the inclusive blokes do, because all our guys got in early to watch the game. It is a rewarding program, but there are some very talented individuals out there. Nathan Pepper from the SANFL does an amazing job at running that league. I think the SANFL should be proud of the product they've got there.
Yeah, and to Woodville West Torrens' credit, I think you've probably enveloped and really jumped aboard probably more than anyone else, where Jimmy Tumpus was fantastic, and trying to think Jesse Lonergan, and you've had a few people involved and gone out and take training at various clubs, and so it's a fair bit of you guys really investing and giving as well.
Yeah, that was the purpose of when I took over the role as the senior coach of the state team. It was to try and bring the standard of the state program up a level. So the assistant coaches are, we've got Jesse Lonergan, who's an assistant coach. We've got Matt Knight, who's now out at Athelstan. He's an assistant coach from Woodville West Torrens. We've got Annie Falkenberg, the female captain, who's an assistant coach. So it was about improving the standard of the program, where they were exposed to high-performance testing as though what those young fellas go through and young girls go through in the combine. The Inclusive League get to do that same exact testing, which then just gives them the exposure to a high-performance environment. Yeah. And I think for us, that's, you know, when we see how competitive they become in that testing environment, I think that's the reward for us.
And because the wheelchair footy too, hopefully will grow to more sides, but, yeah, it's developing probably the following number of people coming out watching, gradually increasing, and, yeah, the gradual hopeful people are out there. Hey, there's things out there, and get involved with
awareness.
Disability.
Awareness
is gradually increasing.
Yep.
It is, and it's, you're going on wheelchair footy. Has been amazing for our footy club to bring that team in. Has been fantastic, but it's one of those things. It is an awareness. You're going up a well-established sports against basketball, wheelchair basketball, and things like that have been around for many, many years, and we're starting this new concept. But I think the buy-in now from league clubs to see the league players, men and women out there watching and participating in it now is, I really think, it's starting to get some solid traction, and we're getting a lot more people registering for it. We've noticed this year as a club, we've got a lot of recruits that want to come to the club now. So we're starting to see the transition from basketball into football, which is, that's probably what the sports need.
Yep. And look, hopefully the SANFL club stick around and it continues to maintain its integrity as the second, I don't think second best is the correct word, it's the second most big comp and recognised as such in the country too.
Attendance-wise
and all that as well. It's something we should be proud of, and I don't think it should be forgotten in that regard too, Dave.
I agree. The thing you just mentioned there, the attendance, like we've had our first three home games, obviously we've played, have been the highest attended games we've had for many years. So I think the SANFL should be really proud, and Darren Chandler and the team, of what they've been able to do. Like round one for us on Good Friday, over 3,000 people down at Moreteam Kia Oval. That's a high attendance rate for us on a public holiday, on a long weekend. So what we're seeing is, and we are seeing the crowd come back now, and I think that's a real credit to the standard of footy that's being played. But also, the promotion of the game, we are seeing a lot of promotion about the sample. So I think, it is one of those things that we should never underestimate the product we've got. It's a fantastic product, and it's loved by a lot of South Australians.
Yep, very much so. Hey, David, good luck. Good luck continuing with the success of Woodville West Torrens at the moment. Obviously not quite so much luck against the Red and Blue mob, but yeah. look forward to catching up again the next couple of weeks, Dave.
Beautiful. Thanks very much for your time, fellas.
And we might touch base with you as the season goes on, if that's all right as well.
No, I look forward to it.
Thank you very much, mate. And thanks to David there for his time. Absolutely fantastic. And obviously what's going on down at Woodville West Torrens there at the moment, they'd be pretty happy.
And just SANFL-wise and footy-wise in general. And David carries many hats, and he's a person I've got a lot of time for. So thank you. Thanks, Dave.
Absolutely. All right, we'll move on to this week's games. We got Glenelg and Sturt in the grand final rematch down at Stratorama Oval.
Yeah, I'll go the Bays.
I'm going to go the Bays as well. West Adelaide v the Panthers.
I'll go West Adelaide.
The Bulldogs v the Eagles. This becomes a really good game.
Big game. If in doubt, go the home side, so I'll go the Ponderosa.
It is at the Ponderosa, and I will go the Eagles. North Adelaide v Adelaide.
I'll go North Adelaide.
Depending on what Adelaide select with their younger guys, I'm going to go North Adelaide as well.
Yeah, they'll take a few down, remember, and all that.
That's correct. And just to finish us off, could this be the last time that Port Adelaide and Norwood play in the SANFL at Alberton, being that it's on Saturday night as well?
Maybe. I still think it's a bit more complicated than that. I still think Port will still be in the SANFL next year.
We'll watch to see how that one goes. But who are you picking, mate? Norwood or Port? Now, again, do we secretly tip against Norwood again?
I'll go Norwood.
No, I'll go Norwood as well. Yep. Absolutely. All right. Now, just one thing to finish off on the SANFL. Do we see a merger between the Bloods and the Panthers anywhere in the future? Because they're probably the two most logical clubs that would probably benefit from a merger. Again, question without notice.
Yeah, but again, you've got to remember that the likelihood of Port and Adelaide leaving, so you're down to eight sides then, you don't want to go any less. Mm-hmm. So I would hope not.
I'm just thinking from a financially viable point of view.
Both those clubs are in...
Yep.
Need a better outcome than currently. Leave it at that.
Hence the reason why I put it on the agenda. Question without notice potentially there.
Look, and the more important thing, look, our hearts out.
Yes.
And best wishes to Sam May. Can't really say anything more than that. All the best.
Yep, absolutely. Hence the reason why we haven't really brought it up because it's giving some privacy to the family, which they've asked for, and just a terrible situation, unfortunately. The latter after round three, Woodville West Torrens and Central's and Norwood all undefeated with 3 wins apiece. Glenelg sitting 4th and Sturt sitting 5th. All right, let's move on to the SNFLW very, very quickly. Wins to Glenelg, South Adelaide, West Adelaide and Sturt in the SNFLW, mate.
Yeah, probably Glenelg there, reasonably impressive. I think South Adelaide have now got the mojo and South are looking like they're probably the team to beat.
Mm-hmm.
Norwood a little bit disappointing against the Bloods.
Yep.
And
West Adelaide have improved in that area this year too. So.
And the development final is this weekend. Mm-hmm. South Adelaide and Glenelg playing the development league grand final.
And that probably gives you a bit of a look at where those clubs are at when it comes to
probably a little bit more depth. Yep.
All right, let's move on to this week's league matches, which is Glenelg v. Sturt.
I'll go Glenelg.
Norwood v. the Panthers.
I'll go the Panthers.
I'll go the Panthers there as well. I'll go Glenelg in the first one. North Adelaide v. West Adelaide.
I'll go West Adelaide.
I'll go West Adelaide as well. And the Eagles v. Centrals.
I'll go Centrals.
Centrals it is. The ladder after round 6 is Glenelg and South Adelaide sitting top and second, Central sitting 3rd and Norwood sitting 4th. All right, mate, very quickly on the cricket, will Rashid Khan play for the Strikers in the BBL after Australia postponed its tour of Afghanistan?
I think they're two different matters. My understanding is he loves playing here.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're two different matters.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Men's state squads, ins and outs. Anyone from South Australia that we're looking to secure? We did talk briefly about it, but is there any more to come that you can think of?
Not sure. Not sure. I'm not sure, I admit. Jake Weatherall comes back into the equation. I haven't spoken to Weathers about it.
Yep.
I might give him a call this week, though.
Yep. Might be something to follow up on for next week there. And Harris starring for Leicestershire and will be hard to ignore with the form that he's in at the moment for the Australian team. Obviously, there's big gap between tests, but he seems to be scoring some pretty good runs over in England at the moment.
Yeah, he's probably getting himself back in the equation well and truly for the next Ashes tour. So,
All right, mate, we're going to take a very, very quick break. When we come back, local legend and golf extraordinaire, Craig Martin, coming right up.
Yep.
Liking this podcast? Please like, rate, and subscribe.
I'm Stephen Rowe, and you're listening to the Game On podcast.
Local legends.
And joining us on the line is Craig Martin, talking all things golf, with Adelaide being the centrepiece of the LIV Tour this weekend. Thanks for joining us again, mate.
No worries. Thanks for your time.
So where's your highlights and what are you looking forward to this weekend, mate?
Yeah, well, unlike last year, I was out there every day. This year, I haven't had an opportunity yet, so looking forward to getting out there on Friday and watching. By all reports and from what I've still keeping a close eye on things. Been reading and seeing lots of social media and whatnot. The course looks in immaculate condition, which last year was fairly rushed. Preparing the course, they've obviously had 12 months to prepare, with the LIV guys injecting a lot of money into the maintenance of the course. So I'd expect the golf course will be in fantastic condition and probably a tougher test than it was for the players last year. But ticket sales are they've increased capacity. So last year, I think they were averaging low 20s, 20,000. But there's obviously being such a big property, there's room for more general admission.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're expecting up to 30,000 people daily. I think Saturday's a sellout, but there are still tickets available for Friday and Sunday from what I've read and heard on the radio this afternoon. So, yeah, no, the anticipation, I mean, last year, no one really knew what to expect. It, you know, to go and see it live, you'd seen it on TV and whatnot, but the whole concept, different to the traditional golf tournaments that we've discussed in the past. But, yeah, I mean, the expectations were just blown out of the water in terms of the crowd and the golf. I mean, the golf was crazy in terms of the scoring last year. Like, Taylor Gooch 20 under after two rounds.
Mm-hmm.
No one could have predicted
thought
that.
Thought it was
even.
You playing, Craig.
Maybe 20 over, but no one could have predicted those scores. Even during the practice rounds, I was kind of predicting the guys would maybe shoot 6-7 under.
Yep.
But he went out there and shot back-to-back 10 under rounds, which was unbelievable, and then held on to win on the final day. So it'll be interesting. I mean, last year's weather was just amazing. Had no wind for 3 days and quite warm conditions. The forecast for the next few days, a little bit cooler and hopefully a bit of breeze. So that's the golf course's defence.
Yep.
Is obviously the weather and also the way they set up the golf course. So you'd anticipate they still want good scoring, but I would expect maybe about 15 under to 18 under will win over the 3 days, but subject to weather and obviously the way they set up the golf course. But the way LIV is set up is really to entertain those watching on TV and around the world, and obviously the masses that are there, which Australia and Adelaide has really set the benchmark for LIV golf.
Well, that's
internationally.
That's what I was going to ask you. How can Adelaide improve on what they did last year, considering it seems to be the talking point of the golfing circuit at the moment?
Oh, I suppose like any event, there's probably those that were organising and whatnot. Will improve this year. I mean, there are a few issues around congestion around the golf course and things like that. So how crowds move around the course would be one improvement. Probably I would expect you'd probably find the spectator ropes aren't as close to the fairway as they were last year. It was kind of crazy. I've never seen, basically you're almost standing on the fairway. So
yep.
I'd expect those type of things. And, I mean, the corporate hospitality was obviously a big component last year, and that's fully booked out. So that's a good thing because it's attracting a lot of people from interstate and overseas.
The party hole's still going?
That's what I was going to ask you. How's that set up this year? Could we see more hole-in-ones this year?
I mean, that's a pretty tough hole, to be honest. I mean, I know last year, the last day, they played it shorter, so the guys are probably only hitting 8 or 9 on in there, but it's such a narrow green and it generally plays into the southwesterly breeze, so it's not an easy hole. I noticed today in the Pro-Am, even the amateurs were hitting from right at the back, which is about 155-metre shot. So hitting, 7-iron, 6-iron, depending on how far you hit it, of course. But for the pros, it's still sitting, they'd be hitting 7-8-irons from back there. So it's not an easy hole. That went around the world, obviously, that hole-in-one and the mayhem that happened afterwards with the beer cans. And I think I said last year when that all happened, that won't happen again. And there's plastic cups this year around that hole, so
it's probably a good idea.
Well, unfortunately, a couple of people got hit. Officials and marshals got hit by cans, which is not good. So, there's obviously that's one improvement for this year would be all the plastic cups around that hole. Yeah. But obviously, the party atmosphere and with the concerts afterwards as well. It's a brilliant event. So,
and now is Neimanum the man to beat this year? Do you think?
If you look at the quality of the players compared to last year, really last year there was 48 players, excuse me, and really from 35 to 48, the depth wasn't there. The way that they've recruited and also they had the Asian tour with the guys coming in who earned their right to be on the tour. Mm-hmm. Obviously, John Rahm's team came in, so there's an additional team, and then there's a couple of wild cards with Anthony Kim. It's fantastic that he's back, having not been on the Pro Tour for 10 years. He's had his personal issues, and I heard him interviewed by Timmy G tonight, and very good interview. He's overcome his own personal issues and never thought he'd come back to golf. Golf's such a hard sport to click, so that's great that he's back, and, he shot 65 in Hong Kong, so... good to see him play well. Really, it's such an open field. I mean, Cam Smith, naturally, you'd expect would be up there. But you could throw a dart at a dartboard and 20 names and probably it'd be a good chance. Grange kind of will suit a longer hitter.
Is that where Chambeau would actually benefit?
Yeah, I mean, really, the key to Grange is, yeah, driving, and certainly with no wind, the par fives for these guys are fairly short, or certainly reachable, all of them. But if the wind gets up, some of them play into the wind, makes it a bit tougher. But certainly someone who hits it long and is a good putter, so I'd be tipping someone like DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka. From an Aussie point of view, Lucas Herbert, I think the golf course will suit him. He would be my pick for best Aussie. I think really there's so many good players in that field. And that's the beauty of LIV, despite what the PGA Tour lovers will suggest, is the LIV Tour, you've got now a collection of 20 to 30 of the best players in the world. Who are there, and I mean, yeah, okay, the top five players at the recent US Masters were PGA players, but four of the top 12 were LIV players, so they're competitive. They're playing a reduced schedule to the guys on the PGA Tour, but they are some of the best and deserve to be playing all majors. Golf is still going through that turmoil.
Well, that was what I was going to ask, is that we have talked about it previously when we've had you on the show as to where it's at. Where is it at currently now as we speak?
Yeah, I would have thought, actually, because we haven't spoken for a few months, I would have thought there'd be some more resolution to it, but it's kind of stalled. There were talks that PGA Tour and LIV guys met up in the Bahamas a few weeks ago, I believe. But if you look at it, PGA Tour really, I think they can see the writing's on the wall, but they're really, not conceding as much as you probably thought they would.
Mm-hmm.
You just hear Greg Norman this afternoon in his press conference say, we're doing what we're doing. And they can do whatever they like, for the betterment of the sport long term. The two sides have to come together, whether it's just for the majors or if it's just for the big events like the players and other events mm-hmm. on the PGA Tour. But I mean, really, if you look at the PGA Tour currently, Scotty Scheffler is just dominating. Full credit to him, like he would probably dominate if he's playing here this week in Adelaide too.
Yep.
So it's not a case he's beating Neville nobodies. He's still beating quality fields. Because anyone who's playing on the PGA Tour still is very, very good golfer. I think, I don't know, it's just a real weird one. There's all the rumours have been going around about Rory McIlroy joining LIV, and that's all been proven to be BS.
Yep.
He resigned from the PGA Tour Players Advisement Board about four or five months ago because he was left out to dry and became really PGA Tour's scapegoat. But interesting, in the last 24 hours, it's rumoured that he's going to join that board again. So it's still interesting times with golf. The next 2 years, for the betterment of the sport, the last thing you want is guys winning British Opens with reduced fields and, players like, Brooks Koepka Brooks is probably a bad example because he's exempt with his PGA win, but maybe, guys such as Sergio Garcia and even John Rahm really now joining LIV, he should be playing in every event possible, but obviously can't go back to the PGA Tour now that he's joined LIV. So it's just a real, real messy scenario. What it looks like in the future is anyone's guess. You hear all the players on both sides; they don't know what's going on. And the powers to be eventually we'll have to sort it out.
All right, mate. We'll get you out of here on this one. Your top three for this weekend at the LIV Golf here in Adelaide. Who do you think?
My top three, like I said, I'm really like Lucas Herbert. I think he'll be up there. Go for Brooks Koepka and maybe one out of the left field, maybe Louis Oosthuizen. So
we'll keep an eye on that one for sure.
All good.
Thank you very much for joining us again, mate, and giving us your tips for this weekend, but also talking golf in general. And as per usual, we'll touch base with you around some of the big golf events.
Greatly appreciated, Craig.
No worries, guys. Cheers.
Thank you, mate. Bye-bye. And we thank Craig for his time there tonight, talking all things golf, and in particular the LIV Golf being back here.
He loves his golf, Craig. He's a good man.
Thank you for joining us once again. All right, mate, let's get into Happy Days.
Happy Days.
All right, happy birthday this week to Isaac Rankin, drafted to the Gold Coast Suns with pick number 3 of the 2018 draft. As a child, Rankin played an array of sports, including basketball, rugby, tennis, and eventually chose to focus on AFL or Aussie Rules football. He grew up playing junior football for the Edwardstown and Flinders Park football clubs before being given the opportunity to rise through the junior ranks of SNFL club West Adelaide. 2016, his first senior SNFL game for West Adelaide at the age of 16, kicked 2 goals on debut. That's not a bad way to start at 16, is it?
He showed a bit. I do admit there was a game against Nord at Richmond where he caused the ball to reverse twice in the last 5 minutes where Nord won by a point. We might have been thanking him after that game. So
absolutely. He was later selected to represent South Australia in the 2017 and 2018 Underage Carnival or Championships, where he was named All-Australian both years and played a critical role in South Australia's 2018 Championship.
I think he kicked 5, yeah. He certainly dominated.
Absolutely. Rankin made his debut against the Melbourne Football Club in Round 6 2020 and impressed with a 3-goal performance, which earned him the Round 6 Rising Star nomination. Obviously, then being traded back to, or requesting a trade back to Adelaide, and the rest has been history. Now moving into the midfield, what can we expect moving forward? I'd like to see him in there a little bit more.
Yeah, well, I want to see a bit of consistency too. Like, played very well against Carlton and then didn't do much last Saturday night. Against Essendon. So there's a bit of a... I want to see a bit more from him in that regard.
Teams would have put a little bit more time and effort into him, knowing that he's probably going to be in there. So very, very interesting. All right, let's move on to cricket. 2013 West Indian cricketer Chris Gayle smashes the fastest century in history in just 30 balls.
Yeah, when he goes, geez, he does go. Yeah.
Well, there's plenty of cars out in the car park that have probably got a few windows that might have been smashed along the way there as well.
A few lines to female reporters as well.
Exactly right. We'll move on. Basketball, 1989, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar scores 10 points in his last game as a Laker in the 121-117 win over Seattle Supersonics at the LA Forum.
He did okay.
We've had some legends. Yeah, we have. Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson.
Yep.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is definitely up there as well. All right, we move on to tennis, mate. Bjorn Borg loses 6-2, 6-3 to Jordi Aris after an 8-year layoff without practicing or playing in any exhibition matches.
It showed that if he would have been more than competitive still, obviously.
Agreed. Agreed. Well, he didn't lose love and love. He lost 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And obviously in the second set. Exactly right. Very, very interesting there. And to finish us off, mate, in 2023, the MLB Boston Red Sox outfielder Masataka Yokohama hits a solo home run and a grand slam in the 8th innings, 12-5 win over the Brewers in Milwaukee.
He had a fair game, didn't he? Yeah, you take that.
Well, grand slams are hard to come by, and you know, you're hitting a solo home run and then backing up is absolutely amazing. All right, mate, let's scoot into the extra time big finish.
Extra time big finish.
All right, we'll kick off with tennis. Alex de Minaur is the first Australian to beat Rafa on the clay, but then out in the next round.
Yeah. Encouraging, but then I would have liked him to have gone a couple more rounds. But yeah,
I think it was a huge effort, and obviously a what can I say, an emotional playing. You know, one of the greats of the game, and beating him. You know, getting yourself up for that game. The letdown is obviously the one after, and that's exactly where it is. South Australian Tanasi Kokkinakis dropped just 18 games to storm through to through the qualifying in Madrid against Dominic Thiem.
Yeah, encouraging there. And, you know, you'd love a couple other Australians that have played qualifying to be as fair dinkum as that over
Absolutely.
The years.
You know, he has had some injuries, so understandable as well. That win and also his ranking at the moment has now propelled him into direct qualification to the French Open, and there are 9 Australians that will direct entry into the Roland Garros tournament, 8 male and 1 female into the main draw, kicking off on May 26th, which we'll cover as it gets a little bit closer. Yep. All right, NBA. We did say we're going to talk a little bit more about the NBA last week. We had wins to the play-in tournament teams in the West and the East conferences, which has now got us through to the main draw or round one of the playoffs. We've got the Thunder and the Pelicans, the Thunder leading there 1-0. The Clippers, the Mavericks tied at 1-1. The Timberwolves and the Suns with the Minnesota Timberwolves leading 2-0. The Nuggets and the Lakers, the Nuggets leading 2-0 there in the West. Out in the East, the Celtics leading the Heat 1-0. What do we got? Cleveland leading the Magic 2-0. Series tied between the Bucks and the Pacers at 1-1. And the New York Knicks leading the Philadelphia 76ers 2-0. So some games there obviously being played at the moment. We'll again, keep abreast of that as we go along. All right, let's move on to the soccer. Round 25 had to be rescheduled for the Adelaide United team. They will now be playing on Wednesday, the 1st of May, against the Gold Coast Mariners in Queensland because of some adverse weather causing delay out of Dubai.
Yes, interesting in terms of the... Yeah, there's always a few things contribute, aren't there, in the end? Yeah.
Well, obviously playing games here, there and everywhere, and freak storm going through Dubai there sort of slowed everybody down a little bit. Adelaide United, Giuseppe Bovolina has signed for MLS side Vancouver Whitecaps for an undisclosed fee. This is good that Adelaide is, their youngsters are getting noticed on the world stage.
I think they go okay as a business, Adelaide, in that regard too. And remembering that's exactly what it is. It's buy cheap, sell more, etc., to try and therefore balance your business that way.
It's a very interesting concept, isn't it, when you think about it?
Yeah.
Adelaide with 3 wins out of their last 5 games, but they still sit 9th.
Yep.
All right, so let's finish off on a couple of... I'll open the floor, mate. The good, the bad, the ugly for this week?
Oh, I think you've got to go the bad, the Adelaide Essendon game in general.
Yes.
Yes, the umpiring, but... Josh Rochelle, and just in general, that's my bad, probably bad. It does qualify for bad and ugly, I think.
Yep.
Good.
Liv Golf being back in Adelaide,
Liv Golf,
mate.
Back in Adelaide. Yep.
And for me, the good is definitely the Liv Golf being back in Adelaide. The bad at the moment is probably the state of football with suspensions and umpiring decisions, and there's a lot of stuff up in the air, and there's a lot of moving parts, and unfortunately... we're not getting the quality of umpiring that we have had in the past, and with all of this scrutiny, it means that we could potentially lose a few along the way as well, which wouldn't be good. All right, mate, it's been a huge episode once again. We thank Dave Kuzner, we thank Craig Martin, and as per usual, mate, we promise to do better next time.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, mate.
In this crazy world we live in, we all need the distraction. Enjoying the show? Like, rate, and subscribe. Hook up and connect with us on social media at SportsCastSA. We'll see you next time on Game On.